Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, mostly on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 10K Collective podcast, the place to be for six, seven and eight figure Amazon sellers. Today, we're interviewing Steve Anderson, author of The Bezos Letters. The Bezos Letters are a set of 14 principles. Well, it explores the 14 principles that Steve has drawn out of Jeff Bezos's letters to shareholders. I believe in the word shareholders is a point that he makes, isn't it? Really, really fascinating, particularly for people who are growing their businesses aggressively, as a lot of Amazon entrepreneurs are. So Steve, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And it's great to have you here. So we've talked about various things on the Amazing FBA podcast, particularly in terms of evaluating the Amazon opportunity. This is more for people who are in, you know, knees deep and already doing it. What would you say are the particular principles in the growth cycles that are very important for people who are already scaling a business fast in e-commerce or for that matter, anywhere else?
So I get the question all the time, you know, what's the most important principle? And that's like asking me which grandchild I love best. You know, they're all important. They stand on their own and they interact together. With that said, you know, I've come to the conclusion that principle number six may be the most important, but the hardest to understand and implement. And that's understand your flywheel. So at Amazon, one of the key areas that I think really started propelling Amazon to the growth that we, you know, recognize today was in early 2000. Actually, it was 2001. So again, after the dot-com bubble and all of the stuff that went around 2000, an author by the name of Jim Collins, who published a book in October of 2001 called Good to Great, was invited to Amazon's senior leadership team by Bezos to talk about the upcoming book. And this was in September. And he spent most of his time talking about chapter 8 in that book, which is under your flywheel, you know, the importance of the flywheel. So what Collins found in his research for that book is that companies that were able to make the transitions from being a good company to a great company, the flywheel and understanding that flywheel concept was really important. They spent the time, they actually spent a day, that senior leadership team, it's called the S team, actually sketched out the flywheel for Amazon, what they considered to be the core of what made Amazon work. And you can find it on the website. It's, you know, we reproduced it in the book. And it's the idea of a flywheel being a huge, heavy, you know, round piece that goes on an engine that takes a huge amount of effort to get going. But because of its weight, once it gets going, it tends to move on its own as long as you continue to feed the energy into the flywheel. So for a company and for Amazon, their basic flywheel at the center was growth. And on the outside, or the inputs that they kept putting into growing to feed that flywheel, were more customers to their website. That was one. A great customer experience. That was two. More customers to the website meant more sales, which meant they could have more negotiating power with manufacturers for products they were selling so they could lower prices. So that was key. They were just adding the marketplace. So they added marketplace. Now, if we bring more third-party sellers in, that'll bring more customers in, which will bring them to the website, which will allow them to buy, which will give us more margin to lower prices. And they kept feeding that flywheel. And in my opinion, they are still feeding that original flywheel today. So when you look at acquisitions like Whole Foods here in the US, that's all what bringing more customers in so they can do more with the customers, so they can lower prices. So any business should take the time to sketch out what is your flywheel. And it may not be Amazon's, right? It may be something different. The flywheel concept applies to any type of business, whether it's for-profit or even nonprofit. And we can talk about that more if you want. But sketching out what are the things that I have to do in order to keep that flywheel moving, keep customers coming, keep them buying, keep them, right, allowing me to be the low price if that's what I want to do. And I think probably for a lot of your sellers, that is probably what they want to do. But understanding that, and here's the problem. One is understanding it, and it takes some real time. Two is you've got to execute very well, because if any one of those pieces isn't executed well, that's going to slow down the flywheel.
So how do we go about figuring out our own flywheel? Because I mean, this is a concept that I've come across with Jim Collins, and famously Jeff Bezos called him in. Probably Jim Collins was delighted about that, because obviously just after 9/11, so his book sales were not great, but Jeff Bezos saw something in him, and quite rightly so. So how do we apply this in the simple way ourselves?
Well, I think first, what is your core? For Amazon, it was growth. And from the very beginning, Bezos felt, and I think knew, that in order for them to be successful long term, they had to grow rapidly. So that's he reinvested profits, everything, into building infrastructure, the fulfillment centers, bringing customers to the site, all of those kinds of things. So if growth is your core, now the question is, what are the things that you do today and or can do in the future that will help with that growth? So for many, it could be what Amazon has done. So how do I bring customers to my website? Or how do I bring customers to my marketplace, right? How do I get customers to see my products on a search page, a results page for something that a consumer is buying? And maybe that's more advertising now. Maybe that's, I don't know. I don't know all those details, but that's what you'd have to start thinking about. And then those customers buy from me. Now, what else can I do, right? So I get more customers. Are there other things that I can either sell to or do once those customers buy from me the first time? I would think that would be something important to build that customer base, not just the ones just selling them a product, but are there other things that I can do to continue that growth and maybe add some other streams of income into the business? So I've worked with actually several firms now, just helping them think that through. And I believe it will take time. I mean, it could take, if you want to do it right away, you could get something going in a day, an hour. But really, to understand it and process through it, it's probably going to take several months of coming back to it and thinking about it and maybe even experimenting with, I don't know if this piece of it is going to work for me. And let me also say, Jim Collins updated that chapter 8 just earlier here in 2019. He published a monograph. It's only about 45 pages long. It's not very long. Specifically on the flywheel, and specifically talking about businesses that he has worked with to help develop their flywheel. And I highly recommend that as a resource for those of you who really want to dive in and understand a bit deeper of the flywheel concept. And really, I wouldn't say it's updated, but with current examples or more examples than he included in that original book.
Yeah, it's great. And plus, I listened to that as an audiobook recently, and that was just a fantastic book. I mean, really, book. It's as he calls it, a monograph. But really critical. A lot of what
people call books, I think are just something with one basic principle. For example, do one thing.
Right. That could be 45 pages and not 200.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just so you know, exactly. I mean, your book is kind of the opposite. It's packed with 14 separate principles and they interact, but there's a lot in it. I mean, there's a lot to take away and unpack. But I think the Flywheel Monograph is a fantastic thing. I agree with that 100%. It's and I really like the fact you've been honest and said it's going to take several months, because I think strategy level work, I've been working my way through, I was going to say, not just a book, but a system called Scaling Up by Vern Harnish, which also references a lot of Jim Collins stuff. Quite rightly, most people reference Jim Collins these days. He says, look, strategy is messy. If you're a mechanical engineering type person, you want a mechanical, precise engineered solution, like you get in the execution side of the business, well, you should have standard operating procedures and absolutely nail everything down. On the strategy side, it's going to be messy, and it's going to take time. So allow for that. So, I think it's really important that you've said that as well.
Yeah, I'm going to mention, just make sure you know it, and certainly people listening, I'm almost positive that Collins did a podcast with Tim Ferriss.
And yes, he did. Seldom, yeah.
Okay. So again, if you've listened to that too, that's another great resource to really listen to Collins talk about all kinds of stuff, but he talks about the flywheel there too.
Yeah. And as you say, he's a rare guest on podcasts. He's a very hard person to persuade. I mean, somebody's one of my fantasy guests, so he'll be really, really good, but you know, who knows. But, you'll certainly give us an incredible valuable here. Let's get into, you'll be basically being the Jim Collins for Jeff Bezos, aren't you? You're sort of analyzing the business Jim Collins style. So honored to have you here. Let's come to another thing, which is two things you mentioned already for new business owners. Let's say for somebody who's a bit more established and growing a business fast, two areas that I think are critical. One is the encourage successful failure thing, and the other one is the high velocity decisions. We talked about type one, type two decisions, but so those two seem to me really critical to get right. Let's talk about successful failure first, because obviously it's a reality that by the time you've sold a few different products on Amazon, you're going to experience some failures, some successes. How do we approach that in the most productive way?
Well, the concept behind successful failure is that, you know, we are going to fail. The question is, how are you going to respond to it? And maybe more importantly for a business owner, how do you respond when your employees try something and fail? And at Amazon, failure is core in terms of, let me say it this way. Bezos says in one of his shareholder letters that Amazon is the best place to fail as an employee because they don't punish failure. They learn from failure. And they have some tools, actually, that I think are really interesting. One is called the six-page memo. When they're trying to make a decision about new product, new service, new something, a change in the website, whatever it might be, and they're calling a meeting to get a final approval for moving forward, one, PowerPoint or Keynote, any slide-orientated presentation is banned at Amazon. They're just not done. What is done instead is the person calling the meeting or needing the decision actually writes out a maximum of 6-page memo. Here's the decision we need made. Here's the data behind the reason for the decision. Here are frequently asked questions. And most famously, at least to me now, they write out what's called a future press release. So they actually write the press release on the day the product will be announced to the public and look at all the potential objections, how it's going to work, right? That is not sent out prior to the meeting. It's actually handed out at the beginning of the meeting. And that first period of time, be it 10 minutes or 30 minutes, is spent by everybody at the meeting reading through the memo. So now everybody literally is on the same page. So there's no questions about data. Now the questions are about the decision. Why did you do this? Why did you not do that? So that's decision making. So it's the whole idea of slowing down to speed up. But the second piece of that that I think gets missed is that that memo now becomes the brief and the debrief. So if something didn't work out the way they thought it was going to, they have a document to go back to and say, here's what we thought was going to happen. Here's what actually happened. Where was the disconnect? What can we learn from this that we don't repeat this in the future? And so one of the key things to think about in terms of successful failure is Amazon has an intolerance for incompetence. So you're expected to bring your A game every day. So this is not just failure for failure's sake. Yeah, let's just throw it against the wall and see what happens. It's intentional. It's strategic. But with all of that, everything doesn't work. And again, that mindset within an organization, I think, is key for future growth. Because if you are not testing new, if you're not experimenting, if you're not trying to figure out what the next product or service or what you're going to do next, then your growth is going to suffer.
Okay, so that sounds like a way of making decisions that are important. Would that be like for the type one decisions, as Jeff Bezos calls it, that are really, really important, bet the company kind of decisions? Or does that apply to less big decisions as well, the six-page memo thing you talked about?
So it certainly applies to type one decisions and actually probably takes longer because those are so important decisions. But yeah, this is a way that type two decisions get made well. It mostly happens in the type two decisions. So we make decisions fast. So type two is, you know, a decision that's relatively easily reversible. That's Bezos' description. And we want to try and make that decision well the first time. So that's where the six-page memo comes in. So it is used at really all levels. And Bezos says, as describing the six-page memo process, he says that a good memo probably takes a week to create. So this is not just, you know, an hour and I throw something together. This is thoughtful, intentional. Team members come in to help. Also, what's interesting is the memo never has names on it. It comes from the team requesting the decision. So it's not an ego thing trying to get, okay, my name in front of Bezos or my department manager or my VP or, you know, whatever that position is, but it's a team effort.
That's very, very interesting. So in other words, I like this idea of slowing down to speed up. So high velocity decisions doesn't mean instant spur of the minute decisions, which I think sometimes entrepreneurs can be a bit prone to, and certainly am. And that's a less calculated risk, right? That's probably more of a gambling mentality. But it's a question of having a very structured way of doing it. But then once you've gone through the structure, making an actual decision by the sound of it. And I like this idea of the memo. Yeah, famously, the press release. I suppose that the reason behind that is that you're thinking about how you can sell something to the public. And if you can't sell it, then maybe you shouldn't go into the whole business of how to create it in the first place, right?
Right.
And that makes a lot of sense to me.
Exactly. Well, and part of the question that's answered in that memo is, how will this benefit the customer? What will they see as the benefit? So again, that customer obsession focus that Amazon always has comes through in this type of process.
Yeah, how the customer will benefit. That makes a lot of sense. And I think a lot of people, when they're just starting out with the business, get a bit prone to just following numbers, which is fine. You've got to follow the numbers on the marketing numbers. You know, how many people are buying this sort of stuff? You know, how many units could you sell a month if you own half the market and so forth? But yeah, I think the basic question of, can I create a differentiated product? If so, how is it going to serve the customer better than anything else out there? Coming back to the questions you articulated, I think in the episode for Amazing FBA, you were saying basically Amazon brought in third-party sellers because they can either provide stuff that Amazon doesn't sell or at a better price than Amazon can. So again, one simple couple of questions would be those, isn't it? Can you provide something that Amazon isn't providing? Can you do it at a better price if Amazon is providing it? Which, by the way, I'd suggest you want to stay out of that game, but you know, right. You really want to be brave. But right. You know, the question probably comes down to simply, can you provide something that Amazon isn't providing yet? If you can't say yes to that question, I would suggest everything else is moot. You know, you're looking at the wrong questions there. So that's really helpful. Thank you. So that sort of comes down to the high velocity thing. You talked about flywheel. What other single, just to sort of wrap up, what other single principle would you say is either the most helpful or the most neglected with fast scaling businesses?
I'm going to go to principle 14, which is believe it's always day one. And I think mainly because it is so important to Bezos. His office in Seattle, where the building where his office is called the Day One Building. He ends every letter for probably the last 10 to 12 years with this phrase. The first part of the phrase is, as is my habit, I attach a copy of the 1997 letter to this letter, which he has done every year since 1998. And then he says, remember, or I believe, or it's always day one. And so for Bezos, as big as they have gotten, he is continually trying to make sure everyone, employees, customers, shareholders, understand that at Amazon, the mindset is this is our first day in business. And that when they come in the morning, they are entrepreneurial. They have the excitement of that first day they opened. And that's extremely difficult to maintain if you're not very intentional about it. And so for him, it's a mindset of, and in fact, he's asked, and it's in the 2016 letter, you know, Jeff, what does day two look like? And actually, I should look up the quote, but it goes something like, day two is stasis, you know, led by excruciating decline, followed by death. It's a little more meaty than that, but it's day two is when a company starts losing that initial entrepreneurial mindset and view. And actually, he said Amazon will be a day two company at some point. It's inevitable. My goal is to push it as far into the future as possible.
He's recognizing that at some point Amazon is going to become static or less entrepreneurial, and that's when it begins to die. That's so interesting. Again, I mean, just because we're so used to dealing with Amazon as a huge company, but of course, it's not always been big, and Amazon itself is so big that we are trying to gain market share within Amazon's own markets internally. But actually, the truth is, guess what? The e-commerce space itself is big and growing. And yes, at the moment, 55% of the market share goes to Amazon in the US. So that's colossal. But it's still, and another way of looking at it is it owns about 5% of the global retail market, which is huge. It's as big as, say, IKEA owns 6% of the global furniture market. But that doesn't mean somebody else won't come along and take 8%. I mean, like Walmart, I suppose, would be the biggest candidate right now. But somebody who we've never heard of beavering away in their bedroom in 10 years' time, that may have become the next Amazon. So
exactly.
Yep. Yeah, he sees the bigger picture always. And I love the fact that he sees, you know, decline is inevitable, but we can push it off as far as we can.
As far as,
I think that's really grown up thinking. That's somebody who understands the laws of physics. And of course, famously, he is a physics graduate. I mean, third law of thermodynamics, I believe, is entropy, which is that everything tends towards disorder, basically. So that's just reality. We all die, but let's put it off as long as possible. So yeah, that's quite a sobering note on which to end. But I just want to say it's been a real pleasure to talk to you. We've had a sort of a bit of a bite-sized chunk of what is obviously a substantial strategic and sort of, I suppose, business philosophical set of principles. But I'd really urge people to go and buy this book and have a listen to the audio book instead of if you're busy, you know, too busy to read big books. Because as you said, a lot of this stuff will take months to implement or even longer. But I think you cannot ignore the fact that Jeff Bezos is the world's richest person even after getting divorced, and also has built pretty much at any given sort of day in the stock market, possibly the biggest company in the world by market cap, and their growth story has been extraordinary. So we have to say that there's something extraordinary going on there, and if we can learn that and apply it to our own businesses, we're bound to be on the right track. And I do see elements of what you've been saying. It's very, very interesting to reflect on the reality that I see in people's e-commerce businesses and say, yeah, you know what? The ones that I know really are doing all of those things. I mean, one of the companies that I work with is over a century old, and it's a family-owned business, and they are basically treating it like day one almost, I would say. I mean, they're really aggressive. They're very, very entrepreneurial. And they are excited for sure. They're scaling like crazy. You know, they're juggling furiously. Things are falling off every so often. Things work really well otherwise. But it's a very entrepreneurial culture. So if Jeff Bezos can keep it up after 25 years, I guess after, 100 years, that's even better. And there are companies that still innovate on there after 100 years.
That's even better. Yeah.
Even better. I mean, slightly smaller than Amazon at the moment, but, you know, we'll see how well he can do. So I'd urge everyone to read this. Steve, any parting thoughts before we leave the viewers and listeners?
actually, you know, what you just said was the reason for putting this in a book form, is that I was fascinated by the lessons, and I do believe they, not everyone, not all of them at one time, but I do believe these principles are principles and can apply to any business. And my hope is that business owners of all types will take and look at these and then implement those that they think can really help their business.
Yeah, I really hope that people will take the time. They say leaders are readers, so this is definitely one to read. So amazingfba.com/Bezos letters. If you can't spell Bezos by now, I'm not going to help you. You're running a business on Amazon, my friend. Go look it up. amazingfba.com/Bezos letters. And Steve, many, many thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for Kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million US dollars or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for Mother, P for Peter, M for Mother. Thanks for listening.